Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast. Holy crap, Mark. What is going on in the world? Oh my gosh. It's like every week we get on here and I mean, so much changes in a week. It's just unreal. It's a crazy, crazy thing we're dealing with here. And last week, if you remember, we talked a lot about how to cope with the stress of COVID-19 and all of the different impacts that it's having. You know, I don't know about you, but for me, turn on the news these days is kind of like a scary experience. There's just a lot of terrifying, scary stuff going on out in the world. And it is so easy to get focused on those negative things. You know, there's so many ways in which we kind of get portrayed as a victim to what's going on in the world. And I was reading a news story today that actually gave me some really cool hope. So locally, there's this brewery that historically, you know, makes like whiskey and spirits and different things like that. And they and a couple of other breweries, apparently, it turns out, just like any other, you know, product, or most other, I should say, product producing companies, they're suffering with their business, right? They're not getting as many people in, not as many people are coming to patronize them. And so they've actually gotten together and have turned their distilleries, they've modified them. So that instead of kicking out like 160 proof vodka, they're actually reformulating it. So now they're making 80% alcoholic hand sanitizer.
Mm, yeah.
Isn't that just crazy?
That's awesome.
I thought that was like the coolest thing ever. For me, it just speaks to a lot of things. Obviously, it helps the community. You know, it's good for people. But the thing that I liked about it most in the spirit of us meeting today and for all of our listeners out there is that this company has done exactly what we talked about last week, right? Our last assignment last week was making a list of things that you can and can't control, and then identifying ways in which you can start to work on the things that you can control. And when I see companies do something like this, it just speaks to that on a corporate level, they're implementing some of those skills. This company is choosing not to be a victim to the economic circumstances and the scary things that are happening. Not only that, they're finding a new product to make, but they're doing it in a way and doing it economically in a way that helps the community, because at least here locally, and I think nationwide, we're in desperate need of products like that. And so to me, it was just super inspiring. And I think it would be awesome today to talk about how to not fall victim to that, how to not become a victim to these circumstances, how to take the stuff that we talked about last week and kind of take it to the next level in terms of, not being a victim, but also how do we implement these recovery skills that everyone's been learning and implement it in a way that can create safety, not just in your marriage around sobriety or around sex addiction, but safety in your family, safety in your community, safety in your sphere of influence. I think that would be a great thing for everybody. And I know it'd be a good thing, a cool thing for me to talk about too.
Yeah, I was, you know, we were talking about this before we got onto the podcast, and it ties in perfect with what happened with me on Friday. So on Fridays, I do a special podcast audio training for all of my clients that are in my recovery program. And every Friday is a different topic. I typically gear it toward what I see that they're going through. You know, all of my guys check in with me on a daily basis digitally, and we have a lot of contact throughout the week. And so I kind of know what's going on in their lives, and I try to do training that's directly applicable to that. Well, last Friday, I was sitting here thinking, oh man, I just looked at the latest news headlines in the last, 10 minutes. Yeah. What in the heck am I going to tell these guys and these, and the gals that are listening to this training with all this chaos and craziness? And it was really cool because I've learned over the years, when I try to practice my own recovery skills, when your brain feels overwhelmed and overloaded and you just can't figure things out, learning to just step back and be peaceful and quiet and see what comes to you, right? To upon your higher power and upon God, because he knows everything and I don't know that much. And so can he give me some insights?
Absolutely.
And it was interesting. What came to me on Friday was, well, wow. So what I see out there in the world is people in panic. They're afraid. They're unsure. They're doubting. They're making all sorts of, in many cases, illogical choices and decisions. And it's just so much crazy stuff is going on. And
oh my gosh, immediately, yes.
What that immediately reminded me of was, I was like, man, everybody in the world's turned into addicts. They're all running around out there with their survival, panicking, emotional brain controlling, driving the show. And it was so funny for that insight to come to me in that moment. I was like, wow, this is what we're seeing in what's going on.
Yeah, that emotional dysregulation. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's this is an interesting social experiment that we're all going through in terms of the fight, flight, and freeze response, right? And what that looks like and how that plays out, because we are seeing it in real time. All you got to do is make a trip to Costco or Sam's Club to get a healthy dose of cortisol.
You have to see it in action.
You can just see it on people's faces as they walk out with their 45th, pallet of toilet paper or paper towels or whatever. So...
Well, and that was cool to look around and see people acting in that way, where the survival brain's running the show. But the second thing that occurred to me that I think was even far more significant, I thought, well, who do I know that has skills and abilities and has practiced and has tools about how to handle a situation where your survival, fight or flight, panicked, emotional brain is trying to take over? Who knows how to do that? I was like, well, addicts in recovery.
Absolutely.
we practice that every day.
So true.
And what occurred to me was, wow, if there was ever a time that the world at large out there needs the tools and skills and the knowledge that we have as addicts in recovery, that spouses have as typically women that have faced betrayal trauma and their own survival emotional brains trying to take over, right? As couples in recovery, we have a lot of tools and skills and knowledge and practical application that we use every day in our lives to navigate the craziness and the chaos in our own lives. And I thought, we should really talk about how to use these tools and skills that we have and how to now step up and be, I like the term servant leaders. If there was ever a time that people out there needed leadership in how to step back and calmly manage this situation, it's now.
Yes.
And so here we are. Absolutely. In recovery or, recovering from addiction or betrayal trauma, and we know a lot more than we think we do. We're actually better equipped to step up now and fill this servant leadership role than maybe any other time that I can think of.
You know, I would totally agree with that. I, you know, as you look at the different skills that we talk about, right, some of the stuff that we discussed last week and on prior podcasts, and the things that we're going to discuss today, I mean, there's virtually every recovery skill, I think, that applies to, right, the relationship or fixing your marriage or, you know, gaining sobriety, they are all applicable to this economic and health situation, this health crisis that we're all facing. Because it is a scary, high stress, high tension time, and regardless of where the source comes from, the cool thing is that you know the tools that you and I teach every day that we talk about on this podcast, we talk about in our practices, it's 100% applicable to these same things. And for me, for all of you addicts out there, you know, one of the things that I look at this as is, you know, this is a real. Even though a lot of people are really scared, and I empathize with that because frankly I'm scared too in many respects.
Yeah.
But there is a real, I think, opportunity here, right, to be able to help create serenity and safety, not just in your marriage or through sobriety in the relationship, but by applying these more globally for you to be able to lead out in your family, right, to be able to create that on a family level or even on a community level, because people, like you said, desperately need those skills right now. People desperately need that mindfulness. They need that serenity. They need those things that come with the recovery process and surrender and all those things that we're going to talk about. So I am totally on board with this. This is great.
Well, and now of course, if we're going to step into the addict brain, if this was years ago, and I'm hearing a podcast where someone's telling me because of my addiction and my recovery, I now have the ability to step up and be a servant leader that the world needs. I would have thought, are you insane? I can't even control my own life. I can't even often, you know, dictate when I'm going to give in and not give in to this crazy addiction and just, you know, lose it emotionally or psychologically. And you're telling me I can step up and be a leader?
Yeah.
And so
it's a little foreign.
It is. But this is where we're going to really invite all of you to step back and at least be open to the concept that you know more than you think you do.
You have more
skills and abilities and capabilities that you might give yourself credit for.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, in recovery, either from addiction or betrayal trauma, we take for granted the things that we know, the things that we've learned, the ways we've learned to cope. And we don't realize how amazing those are and how most of the people in the world don't know about these things. They don't know about all the things that we do in addiction and betrayal trauma recovery. It's a pretty small percentage of us out there.
Absolutely.
So let's just kick in right now and talk about some of the skills and the abilities that we do have that the world needs so much right now.
Sounds like
and
a plan.
The thing that really occurs to me is I talk with my clients a lot, and I know you do too, Steve. I talk in terms of, you know, you are not your brain.
Yes.
There's a higher you, an eternal you. When your brain's, you know, 6 feet under the ground with worms crawling in it, you will continue on with your memories and your abilities and your knowledge and everything. So you're not your brain. The brain is this 3.5-pound, you know, firm cottage cheese shaped thing that really is a supercomputer that, you know, is magnificent and amazing, of course. Yet it only knows what it knows. It's a database of information of everything that's happened to you and me since conception, perhaps, you know, since it was first formed in the womb.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it is still a closed system. It is still just a computer system. And I can either allow it, that computer between my ears, to drive the show.
Mm-hmm.
It sees what's going on out there in the world today, especially, and it immediately starts to interpret everything. And because it's so geared to survival, it will start to go to extreme places. Well, this must mean that. And if that means this, then I got to go do this. And now we get into this reactive mode and we're being driven and controlled rather than saying, wait a second, I'm not my brain. I have the ability to step back, be an observer and a watcher of my thoughts. Yes. I can look at what this brain is doing, and I don't have to buy in immediately. I can sit back and go, well, let me look at that for a minute. Is that really accurate, or is that the whole story, or is panic going to be the best approach for me? So I have this tool I call the Forceful Stage Director, and it really is just a way to start to get your arms around the fact that, look, my brain, my conscious mind is just a stage. And there's constantly actors coming onto that stage with scripts and saying their lines. There's a whole play going on all the time. And I can either allow that play to just haphazardly go on based on my reactions to the world and people around me. So players come on, scripts are being, you know, used and parts, you know, said and whatever, and I have no control over it. Whatever's there is there. Oh, shoot. I have no control over this. Or I can say, wait a second. I'm the stage director. This is the stage of my mind. Yes. I get to decide who plays on this stage and the scripts that they're rehearsing. That's my choice. And you know what? All of you panicked players, all of you freaked out people, you catastrophizing, you know, the world's coming to an end players, you don't get to be on my stage right now. Stop right there. Stop right there in the wings. You don't get to go past the curtain. This is my stage.
Yeah.
I decide who gets to play here.
So taking charge, right? Just taking charge of the thought process rather than being guided by the thought process, right?
Yeah.
Being able to step back and also recognize that, like you said, you're in the driver's seat, right? You don't have to be, you know, I use that term before, victim. You don't have to be a victim to the thoughts. You can control the thoughts. You can control that perspective. I like that. I love
that. And I try to do in my own life and with my clients, say, okay, if you get to the place where you can step back and say, wait a second, this is the stage of my mind. You don't get to be here. But the second question is really important. If that doesn't get to be here, then what does?
What does?
Because you can't just have an empty stage. Your brain's not going to put up with that. Right? Well, I'm just going to empty my mind. I'm not going to think about anything. Well, we as addicts know where that leads you. Because the brain abhors a vacuum and it's going to fill it. But if those panicked and doubting and fearful and all that other negative players don't get to be on my stage, who does? Because that's the beauty of you and I not being the brain and being able to be in charge of the stage is we get to decide not only who to keep out, but who to invite. Okay, who am I going to invite to play on this stage of my mind? And what scripts are they going to be vocalizing? I get to choose. Okay, you players, I'm inviting you. Hope and calm and peace and connection and, you know, whatever it is. So this sense of empowerment about just how much we do have to say about what goes on the stage of the mind is so important when people feel so powerless over that.
Oh, I think, you know, that's so true. I mean, I think it's natural human nature to want to control, right? You and I've talked about this before, especially as addicts, where, you know, when you look at how we operate in the addiction, right? There are many ways you could gauge that or things that you could call it. But one of those is it's a really dysfunctional attempt to try to control and regulate emotion, right? We're doing it through medication, but it is nevertheless that attempt. And what you're talking about is another reflection of what we've talked about before, that it's that the desire to control isn't inherently bad, right? We all have an inherent need to have some control over the things in our lives that we can. Oftentimes, I think two things happen. One, we either control them really dysfunctionally in ways that, you know, mess us up or our marriages or whatever. But then the other one is that we become overwhelmed because we can try to control everything that we can't. And what you're describing combats both of those things. I think I love it. This is a great, great way to approach it.
Yeah, because as you start to think about, okay, that negative stuff doesn't get to play here. What am I going to invite? I don't even have to do that process by myself.
Mm-hmm.
What I try to do is stop and be quiet, right? Step outside my brain, so to speak, and then just say, okay, all this negative stuff doesn't get to be here, but what do I need in this moment? And that's where you can call upon God or your higher power and just say, okay, you know everything. What is needed right now? Mm-hmm. Rushing down to Costco in a panic for another pallet of toilet paper? Or is maybe there something better that I should be focusing on? And you'll find that that inspiration, that little insight, that little idea will come if you can stop and be quiet and just listen for a moment.
Absolutely.
I've been amazed at how that works.
No, it's so true. And, you know, I love this idea of, you know, recognizing that feelings are just that, right? They're feelings.
Yeah.
And that they're, I mean, it is kind of that ultimate expression of that mindfulness that we've talked about. And you see examples of this on the street every day right now, right? I mean, we already live in kind of this somewhat isolated society where, you know, we all walk past each other in the grocery store and one out of 10 people says hi to you or vice versa. And we're all kind of like living our own little lives. And when this kind of thing happens, you know, what it really speaks to me is there tends, as far as connection goes, difficult circumstances like this drive people one of two ways, right? It's either down this road that you're describing, which is this connection piece, right? Where we draw closer together. You know, I remember, and this has been the case in past events, right? If we look at the horrific events surrounding 9/11, right? If you remember back, yeah. September 11, 2000, 2001. Awful, horrible time for our country. But one of the silver linings that came from that, I remember, and maybe you remember this too, everybody was saying hi to each other. Everybody was connecting. Everybody was interested in one another. There was this sense of like, we're all in this together. So people were drawing closer, right? And uniting. Although there were some that weren't, there were many that were. And what you're describing is so true. And during a time of worry and panic, it's moving from that, you know, not that me mentality, like you call it, that we mentality. I've heard you say that before.
Yeah.
It's a shift that happens with that.
Yeah. If there was ever a time right now where we need to shift from me alone to we, you know, it's now. And it's tough though, because we're being told by, you know, the powers that be, and of course, in many ways, wisely so, you know, social distancing.
Yes.
Keep your distance, mm-hmm. right? Don't go out there. In essence, stay isolated. Yes. And yet you and I know from an addiction and recovery standpoint, isolation is usually the worst thing you can possibly do.
Yes.
And so we run into this dilemma. Well, man, if I'm being told to isolate and socially distance, then how do I make this connection? Hey everybody, Mark and Steve here. Are you looking to take your recovery and your marriage to the next level?
We work with individuals and couples one-on-one.
With both in-person and online therapy options, you have access to the experts anytime, anywhere.
To learn more, visit us at pbscpodcast.com. Yeah.
And I thought we'd talk about a couple of quick things on that. I think really importantly, it has to start with us as individuals. So I need to try to open myself to being really in touch with my own feelings.
Yes.
Now the tendency in a situation like this, where there's so much, you know, potential catastrophe and all of the what ifs that we hear all around us, the tendency is to just simply go and be completely reactive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now the hard part is going to be instead stepping back. As I said, you are not your brain. You don't have to allow things onto that stage. But also with regard to feelings, a feeling is just a feeling. It doesn't have to turn into something else. It doesn't have to, you know, guarantee all these outcomes. I can just sit and feel. And we learn this in recovery. It's one of the toughest things my guys go through. It's like, Mark, what do you mean? I'm just supposed to sit there and feel all these horrible, rotten, crappy things and just sit with it?
And the answer is yes.
Yes, that's exactly what we're saying.
Absolutely.
But you have to realize you have an addict wiring that has learned over years or decades that when those unpleasant feelings come, you have to react. You run,
totally.
You escape, you avoid, you self-soothe, you self-medicate. But to just sit there and just feel, I'm just going to let this wash over me and I'm just going to feel it.
Absolutely.
Just let it sort of go up over its peak and come down the other side. I don't have to do a blasted thing about this. Except just feel it.
Absolutely.
And that's a huge skill today. And the beauty of that is if I'm able to do that, or at least practice it, at least try it, now I can help others do that. Sure. I can sit with them in their feelings and their panic and their fear and all of their stuff. And so here comes the leadership. Because I took some inner leadership with my own feelings and thoughts and just and practicing sitting with them, I now can show others how to do the same thing, right? Just as panic is contagious, calm is also contagious.
Yes, it is.
You know, maybe you could talk for a second about once I learn how to calm myself within and just sit with feelings, how do I then go to this place of empathy, you know, with others?
Yeah. Well, and I think what you're talking about, I mean, it is so critical, right? Because if the, like you say, I mean, the automatic reaction, I think just for people in general, right, is when we do feel stuff that's uncomfortable is to react, right? We've got to handle it or manage it or get rid of it or something, right? And like you and I've discussed before, I mean, people are pain averse. We all are pain averse, but addicts, especially so, right? We're uber pain averse for all the reasons we've talked about before. And being able to regulate that, I think, not only is important for, like you're saying, our own individual mental health, but also for those around us, because it is contagious. Emotions absolutely are contagious, the way that we respond or react to people. I mean, each of us, everyone listening on this podcast has somebody that is looking to them for how to respond, be it a child, be it a relative, be it a parent, be it a, you know, a spouse, be it whoever, and those things, be it a neighbor, and those things will, they'll either, you know, kind of cascade out and for good or for bad. The beautiful thing, like you were saying, is if I can step outside of my feelings, if I can get outside of my own head, right, that does open the door for me to be able to look at the situation from the perspective of others, right? To be able to connect with them in a way that I wouldn't if I'm all consumed by this fight, flight, freeze response that we're talking about. That ability to get out and to empathize, to connect, to resonate with other people. We talked about this a little bit last week in the form of, you know, doing service or whatever the case is, pulls us out of our own trials and helps us to regulate our own emotions and has that positive benefit on other people as well, right? Because everybody, like we've been talking about, we're all in the same boat. We're all struggling with the same crazy world and the crazy government regulations and the crazy everything that's happening right now. And we can either draw closer together by empathizing with each other, by connecting with each other, by being there for one another, or it can drive us apart and we can become uber isolated and, you know, jump each other in the parking lot for cases of toilet paper and whatever else on our way out of the store, you know, and you're seeing extremes. You're seeing both right now. It's absolutely, there's a real two-edged sword going on with this connection piece.
Yeah. And I think, you know, learning to just sit with our own feelings and really connect with them without having to run or avoid or escape or even fix, just feel. I probably don't need to fix. I just need to feel. And we can help others then do that. It's like, I'm just going to sit with you. I'm not going to put my fix-it hat on. I'm just going to sit here and just share feelings. Yeah, this sucks. Jeez, you look scared. And me too. Can we just like share our scaredness, you know, for a few minutes, just be really raw and honest and vulnerable. And it's amazing how much more helpful that is than suddenly putting on the big fix-it hat and saying, well, we need to do this and we need to do that. I've got the answer to this. That is not nearly as helpful as just feeling understood. Wow, you're scared like me. And we're just sitting here just feeling this stuff together. That's so comforting.
Yeah.
I know it sounds counterintuitive to those of us who have fix-it hats, and I have one of the biggest fix-it hats on the planet, the big old 50-gallon cowboy hat, and, you know, let me put it on. I'm going to fix it all.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't have one of those. So
you don't have one of those. But let's shift gears for a second, because I know we're getting on in time here. If one of the things we need to understand is that we can talk all about stepping outside your brain, being a forceful stage director, you know, for the stage of your mind, just feeling, helping others feel. But if I'm not taking care of myself, if I don't have some good, basic, reasonable daily self-care, I won't be in a position to be able to do what we've just described.
Yes. Absolutely.
If you don't have good self-care, you won't be able to be emotionally calm. You won't be able to step outside your own brain. So we just want to really emphasize again, it's really critical that we all have some basic self-care each day, physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally. Self-care routine, we call it a basic self-care routine. One of the reasons it's so important, besides being able to be healthy enough to connect to others, is something people often overlook. Your immune system, the strength of your immune system, is critical today.
Yes.
They've said that just about everybody's going to eventually get this virus.
Yep.
And whether you survive or not is going to have a great deal to do with the strength and level of your immune system.
Absolutely true.
And one of the biggest boosters of immune system is self-care. If I'm taking care of myself with little basic things spiritually, emotionally, physically, and mentally each day, then my immune system is going to reflect my level of self-care.
Yeah.
So if you ever wanted a reason to have little basic self-care routines, now there's massive motivation, because it will have a direct impact on your immune system's ability to deal with this virus, you know, when you get it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you look at and I love what you're saying, and it's so true. I mean, I'm a diabetic, which doesn't exactly put me in a super fun category for COVID-19. and it is scary in a lot of ways, but that's the thing, is it right? It can be that worry and that fear, depending on what I do with it, can be a very much an upward cycle, right? Where I'm able to surrender and let go. We're going to talk about surrender a lot next week. That's the upcoming topic. But if I'm able to surrender, let go, focus on those things that I can control, I can have that upward spiral in momentum in terms of my stress levels, which is going to impact me physically. Cortisol levels and everything else that happens that immunosuppresses the body, or it can become all consuming, right? I can get on my 12th hour of reading doomsday news and, count my toilet paper roll stack for the 45th time and, inventory how many thousands of pounds of food I have or whatever, right? And I can very much go on a downward spiral where it will be that self-fulfilling prophecy, right? The more you worry and fear with this thing, in many ways on a mental health level, the more vulnerable you are going to be to the thing that you fear.
Yes. Yeah.
because like you said, I mean, it's a scary thing where most of us are going to get this at some point in time. And that is really scary for a lot of people. And I do connect with that. But at the same time, there's another perspective to take with it. And that's to look at it as, you know what, that perspective is liberating, because it's something that I can just recognize as a constant and operate from, right? In terms of how I prepare, how I act, how I interact with my family and friends, you know, either for good or for bad, right? Do I count down the days until I get this thing convinced that it's going to take me, which it very well could, or do I take this as an opportunity to make the most of that time, right? Yeah. To connect with my family and friends, to connect with myself, to work on myself, to better myself, which in turn, like you said, the side benefit of that is that it's going to give me the best shot physically to really pull through this, or people who, anybody, right, who gets stuck with this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, so that self-care is a big deal, and then you'll be better equipped, you know, to help others as well. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I, we often say the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection.
Yes.
And I'm going to kind of extend that a little bit in this current scenario. The opposite of worry and panic is connection.
Yes. Yes.
And so we're very much in a, we need to go to a we-centered approach in all this. When I know the brain, I know the survival brain's tendency is to want to go the opposite way. Shut yes. down, isolate, hunker down, go into fetal position. But we need to, you know, if people could see me, I'm folding my arms tightly against my chest, right? And hunkering down.
Uh-huh.
And that's exactly what we don't need. We need to have our arms wide open, right? I'm in this vulnerable posture right now in front of the microphone where all my vitals are exposed.
6 feet apart, of course.
Yes, doing this 6 feet apart, of course. Right? Talk about an oxymoron. Let's get close, but 6 feet apart and open. Yeah.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right.
But there's lots of, you know, talking about, you know, the ability to take lemons and make them into lemonade. There's so many opportunities now for real connection. Just everywhere around us to bring us closer than we've ever been before.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that we know as people in recovery from addiction or betrayal trauma. We know that adversity, trials, extreme, immense, deep pain can actually bring us more growth and more advancement and more experience than anything else almost in the world. I mean, how many people listening to this podcast could say, yeah, if I look back on the times of my greatest growth, the times of greatest personal progress and greatest closeness to others, yeah, it was pretty much the really crappy stuff I went through.
Totally. When you're in the trenches together. Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is a chance to really bind together. And I'm going to suggest that if we'll discipline ourselves, if we'll get in touch with, you know, the empowerment of our higher power and God and go forward together, I think when we come through this, and we will, I think we're going to be closer and more bound and bonded together than ever.
Yes.
Right. And you mentioned the 9/11. Look how unified and cohesive this country was for years after that, you know, that situation. Mm-hmm. I think, unfortunately, we went back to complacency, you know, when it all calmed down. Now here comes another wake up call. Hello. Why couldn't you just stay unified?
No, absolutely. Well, and I'm glad you brought up the God connection, right? Because there's so much that's crucial to that. We won't get into all the benefits today, but a belief in a higher power is so, you know, you talk about mental and physical health. There's been study after study that those who believe in a higher power of some sort, greater than themselves, whatever that looks like, right? They are more resilient to change and catastrophe. They're better able to weather different situations because they have this unchanging, unfallible, right, if you will, support system, right? Looking to this idea that something else is at work, something bigger than me. And everybody's in a different place on that God connection spectrum. Like you and I've talked about, we've both kind of run the gambit of everywhere from like super close to God to, well, we'll keep it clean, not super close to God.
Yeah.
So you and I both have lots of experience with that. And I know our listeners here who are tuning in with us do as well. But the question that I would throw out there to listeners is, you know, how are you and God doing today? Mm-hmm. If you look at this thing like a casual relationship, sometimes we build this up a little more than I think we ought to. Again, everyone's belief system is different. But I tend to look at my relationship with God, with my higher power, as really not that different from the other relationships that I have, right? If I've got a best friend, but I don't call him, if I only call him once every 6 months, he and I aren't going to probably be best friends like for long or super close. It needs that, you know, that relationship needs that constant touch base. It needs that constant connection, whatever that looks like, right? And lots of people have kind of those traditional go-tos of like prayer and things like that. But it could be meditation. It could just be this mindfulness that you were talking about, right? Just being present with yourself and stepping back from your emotions, not becoming embroiled in them, right? Being able to see it from that side. That God piece for me has been a game changer, not just in my recovery from addiction, but it is the thing that and we're going to talk more about this next week. This is the thing that I look to when I need to give away those things that I can't control, because there's got to be a place where those go. Because right now, I don't know about your list, Mark, or you listeners, but my list of things that I can't control is about 5 miles long right now in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, as you talk about this connection to God, I think one of the things that I'm really found myself being mindful of recently, and especially because we live in such a religious culture in our particular community,
yeah,
there can be some confusion about that religious culture and a real connection to God.
Oh my gosh. So
true. I actually help. Sometimes I have to help my guys go through an exercise I call fire your false god and hire the true one.
Yes.
And we just get all of these stereotypes and stuff. I mean, there's all sorts of extreme stuff floating around the rumor mill right now, right? That, you know, that this is it. The apocalypse is, you know, hours away. You know, this is all signs that Jesus is coming next week. I mean, there's just,
yes,
it's just endless how this gets blown up into all this stuff. And I don't know what of that is true or accurate or in between. I'm not even going to claim to even be anywhere remotely close to knowing what all that is. But what I do know is that if we allow too much of this religious extremism, it can really get in the way of this really genuine, raw, real, direct connection I have to, in my case, a Heavenly Father that I need to talk to. I don't need all these filters about, you know, what's about to happen or what this means or what it doesn't. I just need to have really raw, open conversation with my Father.
Absolutely.
Boy, I'll walk down, I'll be walking around and I'll just be having a conversation, man. Sometimes people see me driving in my car, that guy's talking to himself. He's a lunatic.
Sure.
No, I'm actually talking to God. Like, all right, Father, this is really getting nutty.
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you what I'm really feeling now. And so here it is. Blah. Complete. I'm going to be a really raw admission right now. There's even sometimes in my prayer where a little colorful language comes into play, which people would consider to be ridiculous.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm not the only one.
But that's raw and real how I feel, man. And if I can't express that to him openly, then that connection just isn't there for me. And I had a surface, formal, robotic kind of relationship there for many years, even decades.
Yes.
And I had to fire that false god that I had worked up in my own head. And I had to be willing to open myself up to the true, compassionate, loving, you know, just amazing, fantastic being that he is.
Absolutely.
We can get away from that today.
We can. And like any other connection, I think it can be one of those two extremes, right? We can isolate and pull back and say, I got to handle this. God's not going to take care of me. God's not going to be there for me, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And let the negative side of that belief system consume us. Or it can be something to draw you together. I mean, I so resonate with what you're talking about. I am the same way. My language oftentimes gets quite colorful with God, which I know most people would just be like, that is not cool. but if that's what I'm really feeling, I mean, I don't pretend to know how God thinks, but if he's anything like any father, right, I think he'd much rather have a little bit of real connection with his child than a bunch of fluff. You know, God doesn't need from me prayer number 972. What he needs is for me to just get honest and to pour out what's going on for me, be a place of support. What he needs from me is to be able to turn to that and to lean on it rather than keep the distance, which is what we do when we're not real in those relationships. Anyway, that's kind of a whole other topic.
Yeah, that is a whole other topic.
We'll have to get into that. See, we can just go on forever.
I know. We're kind of out of time. So
we are.
Let's see if we can wrap this up. So my message to all of our listeners out there is there is a God. He is in charge. He knows what he's doing. And I would like to submit that a lot of the really hard things that you've been through, that I've been through, that Steve's been through, all of our addiction, the betrayal, the difficulty, the tragedy, all the stuff that we've wallowed through in the years and decades in the past have perfectly prepared us to have the knowledge and the skills and the empathy and the know-how to now step up and help people around us that are really just feeling so insecure, so without answers, so hopeless in some cases.
Yes.
We know how to help them because of what we've been through. We're not incapable because of addiction. We're capable because of it, of where God has brought us.
Yes.
And I'm a huge believer that God is able to turn everything for our good. And I mean everything, even from the darkest, most hopeless, crazy place imaginable. He has a way of bringing you out of that. And I think today, those of us in recovery, whether that's brand new recovery or whether you've got years of recovery, I think that you and I are part of the solution right now. And I think God will use us if we'll just open ourselves to it and go forward with what we know.
Yeah, no, I so appreciate what you're saying. I completely agree. I mean, this relationship with others, this relationship with higher power, like we've talked about many times, it's this pursuing connection at any cost, right? It's needed at any time in the recovery process, in the therapy process, in the self-betterment process, but especially now in the world that we live in. And I won't elaborate too much more just because you said it better than I could hope to, but absolutely that reliance on higher power, that reliance on those around you, that opening up and being able to just be present with yourself. There's so much power that comes from that. Far more power than a second pallet of toilet paper will ever bring. And so we'll go ahead and we'll wrap this up. So we got an assignment for everybody. I don't know about you, but I'm pretty confident that I do as I say that. That's probably not honest because I think it is. Everybody operates off of a good place with accountability. And we want to hear from you guys. Specifically this week, shoot us an email at pbsepodcast@gmail.com. That's pbsepodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you guys in terms of what's one way that you're going to take the stuff that we talked about today and up your game a little bit in this connection area, how you're going to be a little more mindful, a little bit more empathetic to other people, how you're going to step back, how you stepped back from your emotions this week in some way. Share the victories with us. We'd love to hear from you and include in that email if you're okay with us sharing some of those on the air, because I'd love to do that. As those come in. And this, by the way, doesn't just go for this week. This is with any of the stuff that we ever talk about. We're always anxious to share those things and to respond to those emails and to share your success stories with everybody. Because we are truly, I mean, if we weren't up until 3 weeks ago, we are most definitely all in this together for sure. So thanks everybody for tuning in. And next week, like we talked about, we're going to get into some really cool tools about surrender, how that works, the process involved. And Mark and I have got some really cool takes on that. So good stuff coming up.
Okay, see you next week. That's all for today. Thanks for joining us. And remember, the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it's connection. Together, we can do the impossible.
To learn more about Mark and Steve and to listen to more podcast episodes, visit us at pbsepodcast.com. Everything expressed on the PBSC podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.